Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. How are you doing? Good? Yes? How do you enjoy Tehet? You like it? Perfect. I'm really glad that you came here, A, to the North Room, which is like at the end of the world. So this is the first thing. Second, because it's the last session of the day, so I really appreciate it. Let me introduce myself at the beginning. That's somewhat important. My name is Paula Januszkiewicz, and I'm a pretty boring person because what I do for a living, it's security. Security, security, security. So I am an MVP on enterprise security. I work for a company that I, at the same time, own, which is called Secure, which is doing, security. I'm also a partner with the company that is based in the US. It's called iDesign, to which I'm doing security. So this is technically my person, but what I'm really doing, it's something that is called penetration test. So I'm more actually on the good side, but doing the bad things. Some people call it hacking, but I call it researching, which is a little bit polite way to call something that everybody likes anyway. Okay, guys, so couple of more words. I do have access to a source code of Windows, which makes me a person answering my own questions. If I don't know, I can always check it out. Either I can always ask my husband, to be sincere, because he's another person that is having access to a source code of Windows. We are boring people. Security. What I wanted to talk about today, it's related to all the situations that are in between administrators and management. So all the things that whenever I am traveling to the customer site, and believe me, last year I made over 200 flights consulting different kinds of customers. It's a bit a lot. And I see a couple of things, and I see some patterns. And this is what is this session about patterns and security culture that is in many organizations, sometimes working, sometimes not working. And mainly, the session is going to be about relationship in between the situations whenever we've got, for example, we want to implement some security solution as an administrator, but we can't because management says no. You feel that, for example, implementing that kind of solution, it's not really smart from the IT. I mean, people swear on IT anyway, but they're going to do it more, so you don't want that. And sometimes you just, keep your one eye closed for some security situations. What I will not talk about today, I will not talk about something that is called hardening. And the reason why I'm not particularly doing this, let me display your session goal, is that every infrastructure is different. Whenever you are doing hacking, it's actually a pretty cool thing because you jump into a network and usually you search for the same stuff. You search for the same stuff. You search for patterns. Oh, SQL Server, let's connect. Let's try this. Let's do that. But whenever you are doing hardening, every infrastructure is different. So what I will tell you on the session, though, I will tell you if you want to improve yourself, if you want to be better, do this, this, this. But I cannot tell you how to do it because you know the best your infrastructure. Yes? We're going to discuss a couple of things that are a little bit controversial. We're going to play with rootkits, for example. And I would like to show you what can happen if at some point we are sometimes not managing some things correctly. The perfect example of what we're going to discuss today is actually managing USB devices. So USB devices are actually something that is, as I mentioned, a bit controversial because everybody uses USB devices. But can you imagine at some point what's going to happen if you, for example, lock the USB device for CEO of the company? Or maybe let's keep CEO. He's a bit special. Accountant department. Special as well, but still. Yes? The lady's going to be like, "What? I would like to have my data." And you're like, "Well, security reason is always sounds very good, right?" Okay, guys. So bringing back to the field all the concept, I would like you today to go out from that particular session with one lesson learned. If you could, next week, discuss with your management all the security issues that you would like to cover, but they're a little bit controversial, it will be great. And I will give you a perfect background for that. Is this something that you are expecting? Can we agree? Excuse me. Is this something that you are expecting? Come on. Yes. Come on, Europeans. Just cheer a little bit. It's the last session of the day. Just have fun. Perfect. If you've got some questions, I'm happy to answer those after the session. If there's something that is super throbbing you, just raise your hand and say the question. Okay, let's have it nice. Let's relax, enjoy, leave your phone, leave your email, just listen. Perfect. So, whenever we are discussing the security, there are a couple of things that we should take into consideration. For example, that operating system is just a piece of code. It's just a piece of code. So all the types of attacks that we can expect, they are already done. Of course we do have some new vulnerabilities. Of course we do, yes? But at some point, everything is hitting the same thing, all the same. It's actually getting a little bit boring. But what is important whenever we are configuring our infrastructure is the relationship in between all the files that are working in operating system, like services, explorer.exe, some executables, some DLLs. As long as we know and understand how these relationships are working, that's perfect. And then I'm pretty sure we're going to figure out all the security issues in our infrastructure. OK, so I usually keep the agenda very simple. We're going to cover all the juicy things that are not addressed in vast majority of the companies, like, for example, offline access, which is, OK, whenever you get offline access, you get like everything. Perfect. But we are discussing the possibility whenever, for example, you give to a user offline access, what the user at a certain point will do. Let me, first of all, bring one story to the field. And forgive me the website, to be sincere. I'm not really responsible for the content. So if you feel like, ooh, this is a little bit too hot for me, or maybe my eyes should not see it, I'm sorry. Pants for dogs. Some things are too romantic to me, like lace pants. Na, 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 you see? Nice life. Life can be nice. OK, so what about pants? So let me actually try one thing. So this particular website was published by a very happy company that they care about animals, but they don't care about security. So what we're going to do? We're going to do something that I'm actually a pretty huge fan of doing when I'm sitting bored at the hotel, find out the website that provides you a free shopping. Perfect. In the back, I'm running Fiddler. Yes, Fiddler, it's a web debugger. You can download it from Fiddler's website. OK, I'm going to do rules, automatic breakpoints, whoops, before requests. And that's something that allows me to control how my website works. So at that point, I'm going to go to order. And as you see, my website is like processing. Excuse me, the pictures. Some of them are just disgusting. So let me cover that with Fiddler. Oof, now it's better. OK, web forms. And then I'm going to click run to completion on several places. Perfect. And at that certain stage, we do have already the website. OK, so let's maybe at some point do some small shopping. So as you see, I can buy some extra small pants. I don't know if you need them, but why not? Extra small pants, $20. Pretty expensive. OK, so I'm going to pick camouflage pants and a black leopard baby. If you are a shopper, do you recognize this logo? What is it? Do you recognize the font? Come on, guys. Amazon, pretty close. PayPal, perfect. OK. So I'm going to click Add to Cart because I would like to buy black leopard pants. And as you see, I do have a request for the website that is PayPal. So at some point, I do have this tiny request captured. Just a tiny request, dee-doo, with the price. Did I mention that I'm from Poland and I like to buy cheap stuff? What do you think? So, it's like on a black market. How much did pants for dogs are worth? Come on, guys. $2? Yes? Let's make it $2. Yes? Or maybe let's make it $3. Ah, that's a good man. OK, run to completion. And then we need to do this actually several times. Because the transaction is going on, we are communicating with folder, session is established, so life is nice. So then we need to technically apply some session, PyPal, run to completion. There's a lot of stuff. Let's maybe do this from the beginning. Here we go. We went through it, run to completion. Maybe next thing, we need to run to completion. Unfortunately, it's like that. So I cannot do anything around that. But the reward is worth it. So run to completion. Then we got that. Run to completion. Run to completion. Bam, bam, bam. The last part. And 2-0 to PyPal. This is what we want. Next, 2-0 to PyPal. Run to completion. And in the back, we got our pants for $3. I was willing to pay that amount of money for pants. That stays in the cache of my browser. And as you see, we can do some free shopping. Isn't it cool? Don't do it at home, okay? It's illegal. Yes? I mean, you can try, but please don't buy. I mean, depends what you're going to be the purpose, yes? You can always go to Hong Kong and stay over there. Not referring to any special situation. okay, so what is the purpose? What is the case? The case is very simple. Somebody put that website over there, didn't really thought about how the session is encoded. Yes? Does it make sense? So this is what this session is going to be about this kind of situation. Maybe somebody decided, nobody will hack us anyway. Well, maybe not, but maybe we're going to do the free shopping. So this is this attitude. It's a security culture. We do have a website. Why we are not doing the pen test first? This is like the simple test, the simplest test that you can make to check out how you can play and influence how your website behaves. And by the way, I'm not talking about PayPal. PayPal is doing a very good job. The pens for dogs are not doing a good job. And I picked this website with a reason, because it's pens for dogs. But if you want to buy Cisco stuff, enough to search. Okay, guys. Then they will never invite me on Tighthead again. Okay, perfect. So, I got a question for you. What is wrong in this picture? I think mouse is too far away, for example, yes? So, what is wrong? Let me answer the question in the evening. Who of you would like to have a server in the toilet? Including myself. Who of you? You guys in the back? You would like to have a server in the... It's a very nice and warming equipment. I agree. But what is wrong for me in that particular picture is that I will never use an operating system that is 10 years old. If you pay attention to this small tiny thing. And that's something... I mean, I'm just talking about myself, personally, yes? It's 10 years old. I mean, 10 years ago, 14-inch screen, the price for it was like over $2,000. LCD, of course. Ooh, now we've got like LCD for free, yes? So long time ago. And there are so many known things. I mean, operating system is still supported, but there are so many known things that are not perfectly working. And there are so many things that has been improved. So that's my point. Organizational stuff. Okay, guys, let me switch then to the first subject that we need to discuss today, offline access. Well, offline access, that's something that allows us to help ourselves whenever we do have some problems. Like, for example, we forgot our user password, we would like to reset it offline, the log grown too much, and this kind of scenarios. But think about offline access from the business-wise perspective. And I know, offline access, maybe not that fancy. But if you think about what do you deliver to a user, it's a business tool. It's a laptop. You deliver to a user a business tool. So you say, OK, Anna, you're going to have the laptop. You install all the stuff. You install all the packages, Office, Adobe, whatever, SAP, whatever you've got. And you give the user the package with offline access up. Do users really need it? Do users need offline access? If they don't, take it away. And the reason why I'm saying that, in a really big amount of organization, people leave their stuff unattended because they're going for lunch. That's great, or somewhere else. this is the place that somebody, even an insider, can step in and do something. As long as it's a bit lockered, it's fine, because it protects you from this kind of access. Okay, guys. Maybe at some point you're going to think like, okay, my user will never do it. My user will never be able to connect, boot up from the CD or whatever, the CD, ISO image, whatever you pick over there. My users will never connect offline, and they will never reset anybody's passwords. Really? I think that administrators tend a little bit to think about users as people that are not really having the imagination. But trust me, they will. Because I saw so many things. User will figure out how to get access over there, because this bad IT locked it. Maybe it's not like everywhere in every organization, but why not to see things like that? User cope with that. Okay, so at this point, I would like to show you one demo. And this demo is obviously related to an offline access. And we're going to play with a service that the user is able to install so that we're going to be a little bit malicious here. And by the way, I'm doing the bad stuff, yes? So I will explain you what does it mean, what are the mitigation plan, but from the perspective of how to do the bad stuff, I'll be more on that side. Okay, so I do have over here Windows 8. And this Windows 8 is going to be rebooted from the installation media, so the standard procedure. Imagine that you are an evil user, for example. So we are rebooting it. User is like, okay, that's fantastic. We should at that moment mention that user can do it, yes? So maybe your users can do it. Can user take the drive and do something home? Maybe. So let's think about this from this perspective, because this is what you give to them as a package for business, obviously. Okay, so what do we have in here? Windows PE, I'm going to click, and this is kind of ironic, repair your computer. Oh yeah, we will. And this is something that is always making me super, like, this is hilarious. Troubleshoot, advanced options, because we are booting from Windows client, yes? Advanced options. That's it. This is this advanced option that you were expecting. Okay. At that point, what I will do, I am right now on the D drive. Let me quickly enlarge the font. Unfortunately, I cannot set it up so that you will see it immediately because it's Windows PE, but we got it. So at that point, I'm going to basically show you that this is my place in which operating system is installed. Yeah? So it's a D drive. Letter change. I do have here offline folder, this one. So the offline. And over there, I do have two things. User can do it. Installer for malware. I got malware and I got the installer. So let me jump to installer folder and let me show you what I do have inside. I do have off CMD. This is the CMD simple batch file that's going to install the service that's going to be working as a form of malware. But what are we going to do? I will show you in a moment. Perfect. So notepad off CMD. And at that point, we can investigate what can we do. So you see that we do have, for example, we are copying malware to the D drive, then we are loading, creating the target hive, we are loading system. The reason why I'm loading system is because at the next reboot, all the settings that you've got are actually stored, including services, in the system hive. By the way, if you are more on the user side than on the administrator side, just a quick comment. If you would like to boot up, and if you can boot up, you can, for example, turn off group policy processing. Because group policy client is a service. So search for GPSVC and change number 2, which stands for automatic, to 4, which is disabled. Here we go. Life is so nice sometimes. When you've got offline access, everything is so nice. But and rewarding immediately. I'm not saying no. I'm only showing you the things that are rewarding immediately. So user can do it, for example. Okay. So at that stage, I am installing the Italian service, which is called, you should pronounce it, Badone. So that's in Italian, if you were wondering. So this is basically it, yes? And my service is going to be working on this malware.exe file. Perfect. So let me close that. Goodbye. And off CMD. Here we go. So we do have everything completed successfully. At that stage, I'm going to run a reg edit. And the reason why I will do it is just to verify if my Italian service is installed. So I'm going to go file, load Hive, very quickly, because I already mentioned that, to the D drive, in which I do have an operating system, Windows, System 32. Perfect. And then I'm going to jump to config, and I'm going to load that system branch to verify if my service is over there. So open. Blah, 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 blah. Great. So here we go. Let me go inside. Control set 01. We've got only one, so it's not a matter of choice. Services. And then I'm searching for Padone. And I do have it. This is perfect. So at that stage, what I can do, I can just continue to boot up. And don't boot from the CD-DVD, but to the regular operating system. And let's wait for what's going to happen. Whenever you would have offline access, obviously you can do whatever you want, yes? It's just about the level of sophistication. Perfect. So the user is logging in. And at that point, I can enter some password. But before I do it, let me show you the website. This website, if you are interested, is accessible from the internet. So immediately you're going to see my password from the virtual machine flying to the internet and being published to the website. And that's going to happen to everybody that logs onto the machine. You log in, you're an admin, screwed. Next person, screwed. It's pure pleasure. OK, so let me leave it like that. I'm going to be back with this website. Let me authenticate. So here we go. And enter. I need to wait for the moment for the virtual machine to connect to the network. But that's just a couple of moments. So at that point, I can investigate if my service is running. So I see that I do have an internet access. Ah, just a moment. CMD, let me verify, IP address. I'm going to ping some web. Oh, OK, connected. That's perfect. So at that point, we should be already rewarded. Bum, 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 bum. So here we go. Paula logged in with password, password. If you log in, it's going to be you with your password. If somebody else logs in, it's going to be somebody else with his password. What do you think? Could work in your organization? You don't need to answer, but just a quick setup. OK, thanks. Thank you. One thing, what I'm using it, what is the setup? Because this is the whole magic that you see, yes? But what I did with this service, I do have this malware service, and this particular malware is reaching LSA secrets, Local Security Authority secrets. You can download the tool as well. Maybe not my malware, but you can download the tool that is called WC, like a Caesar, E like Elizabeth, WCE, Windows Credentials Editor. And if you do minus W options, you're going to have try on the terminal server, all the passwords for all users that are logged on. Yes? Some more explanation needed? I love Microsoft. OK. I really do. I mean, it's how it works, yes? It's a feature. OK. Let me go back in here. So we do have this offline access. You can check out websites. My service is going to work, so the password is going to be refreshed over and over again, because I'm doing this every 15 seconds, just to make sure that I don't miss your password, yes? OK, why this was possible? This was possible because we were able to boot up from the CD, DVD, and so on, yes? This was also possible because at some point, the monitoring, the filtering of the web traffic was not implemented, or maybe was not implemented in a good way. But on the other hand, if I will be running my service and checking out once a month and sending this once a month to my website, will you be able to figure it out? This is the question. Of course, we can set up that everybody is in the night, but we are only allowing this and website. Then you are on a good side. Congratulations, because that's the point. OK. BitLocker solves the problem, or any kind of offline encryption. BitLocker, available since Windows Vista. The nice thing about the BitLocker is that, can we bypass BitLocker? This is the nice thing about BitLocker. Can we bypass it? Yes, no? Who thinks we can bypass it? okay, based on what you saw, like 10 hands. Who thinks you cannot bypass it? What about the rest? Are you like developers or what? Okay. What about the rest? Really? Okay. Mixed feelings. Perfect. And that's a good attitude, to be sincere. Because whenever, for example, you're setting up BitLocker, BitLocker is good. Of course, everybody, blah, 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 should have it, blah, blah, blah. And we could, of course, say, like, BitLocker is this offline level encryption that we can implement. Boring. We've heard about that so many times. We need to think about more holistic view. Yes? Okay. So if I do implement BitLocker, are we safe? Just a naive question. Are we safe? We are as safe as the rest of the solutions that you implement. BitLocker is just one of them. Yes? If you don't lock your console, So let me show you a small demo that is related to BitLocker. And I call it Quack Quack. Because that demo involves the Quack Quack. This is Quack Quack. It's rubber and it has a form of ducky. Doesn't it? No. It's just a regular cheap conference pen drive. Maybe not. Haha. It's actually a keyboard. Yes? So it's actually a keyboard. It has actually a chipset inside. You were asking for it for years. You plug it in, you play. Isn't it like that? You plug in some keyboard and it goes. You may manage USB sticks, and that's super nice. And you can say, well, in my organization, we allow only Kingston with a certain hardware ID. So I will say, and what is this ID? Kingston, you say. Oh, that's super nice. Because on Rubber Ducky Forum, you can read how to change the device ID of this guy. Do you know where I do have this policy? Nowhere. For me, it's not existing. Okay. Quack, quack. Is it interesting, guys? Perfect. Perfect. Okay. So quack, quack. Quack, 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 quack. I need to switch to that mode. And the reason why I'm doing this, because I need to show you the whole thing. So, yeah, we got it. Perfect. So I'm plugging in quack, quack. It's called Rubber Ducky by some people. And my quack quack is going to work for me. So it's the most lazy demo you could ever imagine, because I will do nothing. Quack quack is going to do things for me. And what quack quack will do, quack quack will actually do a pretty interesting thing. Type on my keyboard, because it is a keyboard, yes? So this is the cheapest way to bypass UAC. Well, at some point I don't have to bypass UAC. I may steal your data, and I don't have to be an admin. But let's be an admin, yes? Why not? Okay, here we go. Possible? So the next steps that we've got is actually related to stealing BitLocker keys. So what I'm adding right now, I'm adding the zeros keys. It's a key protector to protect my drive. I do have a BitLocker drive. My key, just add it. Perfect. Because I'm a nice person, I will add the one that does not consist of zeros. Yeah, you know, it's easy to guess. This one is not. Okay. But we've got already two. And what I will do right now, I'm going to build up a script that's going to take that keys and publish this to my website so that when I steal your laptop, I will always have things online. You know, push things in the cloud, have them online. It's a fantastic lesson learned. So here we go. Building the script. I do have SCDERR, this is my username, and I do have a password, and I'm publishing this to the web, building it to TXT. Here we go. And now, the next thing what I will do, I'm going to connect to my FTP server. So this is the script that is over, and I'm using the connection that I do have in the FTP server. Here we go. Successful, keys log on, bam, bam, goodbye. Do you know why we made it so slow? Because I made a delays inside. So imagine the following situation. And this is like my favorite. Somebody jumps into your infrastructure to do the audit. Yeah, some pen test. And you are like sitting next to an auditor, and it's for a good reason. So don't get me wrong, it's for the good reason. And I ask you the question, hey, could you please bring me some SLAs for this part of the network? Because I would like to make sure that everything is okay. And it's a very, very smart question. Why it's smart? Because you will never leave your room. You know what I mean? if you leave your room, all the good practices are going to come out. And you're going to be like, Windows L, you're going to lock your desktop, and you're going to be back. And I'm like waiting. But as long as you are in the room, can you tell me why people don't lock the desktop? They have everything in control. I don't want to lock my desktop. I'm around. I'm going to see all the things. I'm around. And what I can do at that point, you're going to be like, OK, it's on the shelf. And you're going to be like, let me give you that. And I'm plugging in the USB stick. Poof, it runs. It's going to take us like 2 seconds. And you are taking the papers and you are bringing us. I'm like, thank you. Yes? So this is the scenario. To be sincere, I got a small opinion about that. And I think that if it's about all the years of education that are related to locking the user's desktop or your desktop, in my opinion, the best job here did not Microsoft, not the policies that you have, but Facebook. You don't want anybody to post anything on your wall, right? So you lock your desktop. Ah, that's a reason. Oh, I mean, one of the reasons, of course. Okay, so here we go. Let me switch up to the extended mode, and let me continue. Presentation. Perfect. So, why a couple of things were possible? It was possible because we were able to read the keys, but I don't necessarily need to read the keys, of course. I can copy data to my FTP server, and we are done. Yes? Couple of things more. User to be able to read the BitLocker keys must be a local admin. Yes? But it doesn't really change a thing. I can do with my Roberta key what I want. USB management. That's something that is a problematic thing. And this is something that we are discussing on that session. Can you implement USB management in your infrastructure? Possibly you can. Can you imagine how many users are going to complain on that? This is a nightmare. And of course this is possible, yes? Technically, big, you got it. Technically, it's not a problem. It's just a port. But mentally, from the management perspective, it's a problem. But do we really need a USB devices? Let's think about it for a moment. Do we really need it? Whenever users are at work, do you want them to take their work home? Obviously, you are a good person. No. Depends, of course. But you can share data in between each other using the file server. And I'm saying a very obvious thing right now. But maybe not that obvious if we think if you can, for example, plug in my rubber ducky. Okay, so the next thing that we have to discuss is related to online stuff. And at that point, I would like to discuss with you a couple of things that are related with denial of service. Denial of service attacks. So this is a very old school way how you can attack people, yes? So there are two types of denial of service that we should think about. One is going to be on the bandwidth. Somebody's just take your network, period. Another one's going to be on the resources. Somebody's going to ask so many requests that your server's going to die sooner or later. Hopefully later, yes? The question is, why we are discussing this subject? It's such an old school thing. Oh, I'm going to send a lot of packets, yes? Yeah, imagine this kid sitting in school. Beam. And then you are like, oh my gosh, we're under attack. Kind of like that. That depends what kind of measurements you put on your infrastructure. And putting this issue to a little bit obvious statement, denial of service, this is something that costs money. If you want to hire a team, not suggesting anything to do you a denial of service, and you put somebody's competitor's website for a couple of hours, you're going to pay around $3,000 for that. Some people sell flowers. Some people do distributed denial of service. Yes? It's a regular business lie. Maybe not super legal, but still. The thing is that denial of service attacks, they are not for free. They cost money. People need to arrange stuff. People need to spend their time. People need to maybe pay to somebody to do a couple of things for them. So as long as, and unfortunately, it's kind of like that, as long as you're going to invest a lot of money for your infrastructure, maybe you're going to be less prone to the denial of service attack. And then you can say, okay, we mitigated that situation very well, and at some point, maybe somebody's going to just a little bit hurt us hard, meaning like we're going to have like 30% of CPU maybe taken, maybe. And that's something that you can work with. Okay, so let me show you a couple of things. And this is going to be a website that is a little bit too expensive from the request perspective, which means that whenever you are making a query, it takes a lot of resources. Okay, so DDoS concepts. For that thing, I'm going to use two servers. First server is over here. So this is IIS. And I do have a website that is running on IIS. And that certain website, it's pretty interesting. So DDoS website. Let me actually browse it. Maybe I'll just use the shortcut here. Bang. Because it loads a little bit longer. So as you see, I'm going to turn it off. If you see, this part loaded pretty fast. But these parts are loading very long, for a long time. If we check out the most interesting tool in the world, which is Task Manager, and the beautiful performance tab that we have over here, as you see, the website is finished to work. OK, so what I will do like that. So enter the website, and then Control-K several times, because I would like to show you the reaction. So what about a website like that? That kind of query is happening pretty rarely. Yes, but when the user makes it, user really makes it. And when the 10 users makes it, then they really make it. And when about 1,000 makes it, then you're going to be like 100 CPU for a long time. To be sincere, I cannot work on my server right now. It's so busy with handling all these requests. You can see things are slow, things are going to be timeout. So typical situation. What I would like to show you, though, from that perspective, is actually a small enhancement for the attack. And I'm going to do this from my other server, in which I do have wcat installed. So as you see, it's running on 100%. If you are interested how do I call this view, it's a Norway in winter. All dark. If you're from Norway, yeah, cheers. OK, so what do we have? I do have my web server here. And I do have wcat. Forgive me, I'm going to copy and paste it. I could type it, but it's not that fancy. What I will do, I'm going to install wcat clients at that point. So wcat, it's a tool that is a free tool that you can download from the internet that you can use to do the performance testing of a certain website. So I'm going to copy that. And I'm going to put it here. Paste. And I'm going to run it. My clients are installed. And then I'm going to fire up the attack that is described in my scenario file. My scenario says only core for the main website. That's it. Nothing special. So paste. Perfect. So the attack is launched. It's going to go smoothly. But this is something that you can expect for that, from that perspective. And I'm not calling for that website. So I'm just making a lot of queries. Millions of queries, yes? And this is how our server reacts. OK, so what about this kind of situation? How we can mitigate this problem? So at this point, what I can do, I can, for example, use something that is called application request routing. And this is a free solution, yes? It's the most simple mitigation plan that you can implement. But let's do it if you do have that problem. So what we can do, we can find out which request for the website it's expensive, and then we can make a decision. Ooh, this takes a lot of time to process. Let's put it somewhere else. Let's keep our front end nice and clean and responding in a fast way, and our back end is going to be the one that's going to handle all the nasty requests. What about that kind of scenario? Sounds promising. Okay, so at that point, what I will do, I will technically find out which request is the one that takes time. And I'm going to run for that F12. So F12, it's a friend of developers and IT pros in many reasons. But from that perspective, I'm going to jump to network. So this is here. And I'm going to go start capturing. And then I'm going to run that website. And it measures a time. But again, from the user perspective, not from the server's perspective, it measures the time of each request. So let me show you what are the results. So at that moment, the first website, actually, let me show you the whole thing. The first website, which was the fast one, took us 281 milliseconds. But slow one, so this one, this is this part here, it took us 8 seconds, and two of these guys are still pending. Whoa. This is the website that everybody's dreaming about. Here we go. 17 seconds for the response. That takes time. And that's going to take longer if your server is busy. So this is how the whole mechanism works. Okay, so what can we do at that certain stage? Let me actually switch to another server. And what I will do, I'm going to move my website to the web server, which is going to be working as a front end. So let me close the things. And over here, I'm going to basically install the website. So I do have here the website files. This is my front end. And I'm going to say that front end is going to hold all the traffic that is nice and pleasant and smooth. But if it's about what do we have in the back, I'm going to use application request routing, as I mentioned. And at that certain level, I'm going to go here, application request routing cache. And that's the module for IIS that you can download from IIS.net website. The only reasonable source for IIS, not including, obviously, all the blogs. But this is like, the website. OK, jumping inside. I need to turn on server proxy settings, server proxy. I do have it already enabled, because I need to proxy all the requests. Then I need to go to URL rewrite. And then I need to create the rule that's going to implement some logic to this behavior. It's so simple, a couple of steps. So here we go. Let's call it tehet. And I'm going to specify the following. Match the pattern. Regular expression. Over here, I'm going to specify slow asterisk, because as you remember, the slow website was called slow one, yes? So slow and asterisk. We got it. And then requested URL. I'm going to specify the URL, HTTP, to the website, to the server that is in the back. So this is that guy that is going to handle that request. Whoever asks for a slow website, go over there. I'm not responsible for that. Perfect. So we do have 10, 10, 10, 10. And then I'm going to specify DDoS, which is that where my website is. And then I'm going to specify slow1 DLL. No typos. Everything is OK. Apply. And since you apply it, it's already working. So on that server, what I will do, I will enter that website. And let me show you the comparison of what I do have on my other server that is handling the expensive requests. So let me minimize it a little bit. We need to unfortunately do it like that so that you see all the things, of course. So let's go in the back and let's run Task Manager and Performance tab. So you're going to see on the left side that the Performance tab is going to be like boom, and on that server, I'm just making the call for the local server. So this is 10, 10, 10, 200, which is my web server, which is front-end. And I'm just entering the website. So here we go. I do have a website, as you see. But on the domain controller side, on the other server side, it's actually my domain controller. It doesn't really matter. Here, you see that the website is handled in a little bit different way. So your front-end stands alive, but the back-end, oh, maybe it's suffering. That, you can manage that as well. But at least your website, as the first point, it's not down, because we are just passing the request somewhere else. So now the lesson learned is you know how to measure the request time. You know how to measure what is expensive on your website. Press F12, run your website. Verify what loads for a long time. If at some point you will not spot it, other people will spot it. I will spot it. When I would like to search for this kind of information, this is the first thing that I will do. Search for, what does it take to log? Oh, this one. Let's try many times. Yes? OK. Useful? Perfect. Simple thing, as you see. And everything is for free. Ah, you know. Polish. OK. Let me go to the back. Perfect. So what else do we have? What I do have for you? Everything was possible because denial of service, it's not the easy thing to manage. Nobody said it's easy to manage, yes? If the whole internet is going to say, oh, we're going to be against that guy, you will never survive. Because this is what distributed denial of service is about, yes? So as long as we know what kind of baseline do we have and what does it mean to be experiencing a lot of traffic and for how long, and again, discussion with management. Hey, management, can you tell us for how long our website can be down? And they're going to be like, yeah, five hours, it's OK. Yes, of course, I'm simplifying that a little bit right now. But as long as you know it, you know what kind of measurements you can apply to your infrastructure. The distributed denial of service can happen to everybody. You've got kids at school. Oh, let's pick this IP address. And then you're going to suffer. So you need to know what does it mean. What does it mean to have a denial of service? At least try WCAT. You're going to know how much traffic can you hold. OK. So at that point, the solution is know the expensive queries. Know how your application works. This is the phase of your company. We need to at least handle the high traffic for it. OK, guys. Next thing that I have to discuss with you, it's related with unpatched servers. Can I ask you a little bit inconvenient question? Can I? OK, so watch out. Who uses Java? Put your hands up. Who uses Java? Oh, OK. OK, I see, like 20% of the room. Another question? Who hates Java? OK, I see like almost everybody. The rest is Java developers, yes? That's what I thought. OK, so a couple of things about Java. Java is one of the applications, yes? Like Adobe, like whatever, like operating system. We are all the time complaining on Microsoft. And don't get me wrong, I'm not standing on Microsoft's side. But it's not all the time Microsoft that is having problems, yes? Sometimes these are applications that are having problems. What about the following situation? We've got this Java vulnerability that is going on right now, and it's not patched. It's called Java Signed Applet. If you are using Metasploit, search for that, yes? And I'm going to use it, actually, in a moment. And the thing is that it's working not because Microsoft is bad, just because we're using Java. It is not patched, period. And because Java is running on an operating system, as a conclusion, we've got something, yes? And the question is, what do we have? So I'm not here to teach you how to use vulnerabilities and how cool it is to press here and do this and do that so that we are able to hack somewhere. But I would like to show you the pattern. And I will use Java vulnerability, and I pick it because it's the simplest, and it's always working, and it's working on Windows 8. Not because Windows 8 is bad, because Java is bad. OK, so for that, I call that demo Holy Grail. Because we're going to play with rootkits, and through Java, using some patterns, I would like to show you how to inject rootkit in an operating system and what does it mean. So what is the pattern? And that lesson learned from that point is that we're not necessarily discussing vulnerability here. Might be. But we are discussing here knowing the points of entry. Yes? So the point of entry might be, for example, the terminal server. And I'm going to use terminal server for that. Why terminal server? Because terminal server, it's so important. That is, and this is kind of ironic, important, but the last patch system in a lot of infrastructures. So if I will like to jump inside your infrastructure and do something, what I will pick? Terminal server. I will also pick domain controller. Let's see what we can do. It's important as well. Yes? And the patching, the same level. The same magical thing is related to clusters. Clusters are patched at the last moment. Yes, everything is patched, but clusters are not. Why not? Because we are afraid that whenever we're going to patch one of the nodes, the other one is going to go down. Well, that's scary. But in 2012, we do have a support for that, and we are cluster-aware updating. So one of the solutions, of course. This is the process that can be managed. OK, so what do we have? So let me jump in here with something that is... Linux Backtrack. Yes, if you didn't know. OK, for that, as you see, I do have a communication with some server. I'm going to run Armitage. Armitage, it's a free solution that actually uses Metasploit, as a database for vulnerabilities. So let me set it up, connect. And it's kind of ironic, so I'm going to say yes, because it uses Java, and we're going to use Java vulnerability. Why not? OK, so we are setting it up. And for that, I'm going to use Java signed applet vulnerability, which will create a web server that user can enter. And because the user enters some website, clicks website somewhere, we are able to get access using certain privileges. On the web server, what I will try to do at this point, I'm going to log in as one of the users. And as that user, I'm going to click on the certain vulnerability. So I do have this terminal server here. OK, and now we are setting up Armitage. That's perfect. It takes a moment. And then I will specify the IP address of myself, which is going to be 10.10.10.99. I wish there was a 666. But unfortunately, yeah, this would be cool. OK, next. Java. Applet. Signed applet. Here we go. So because I'm very nice for a user, let's make this situation a little bit simplified, because I don't want user to click on this 10.10.10 whatever link, because it already looks malicious. So let's just specify at that point slash, so that the user just enters the web page. That's it. OK, launch. Perfect. It's launched. So the only thing I can do on the user side right now is actually to enter that certain website. We can do this from Internet Explorer. We can do this from, at some point, Mozilla or whatever you want, yes? So we do have this situation over here. This is something that is popping up whenever the Java is not signed. If I will, for example, pay for some certificate, I could do this without a prompt, yes? So at some point, let's just click OK. So I accept, run. And in the back, we do have some magical thing happening. I like this, by the way, animations. that's kind of cheap, I would say. And we should have this techno music running in the back, yes? Because we are doing the hacking. OK. Let me just open up the console, maybe. Interact, command shell. Let's see who we are. So we do have administrator desktop. That's super cool. We could do a couple of things more from that. If I enter, by the way, that from Mozilla, you will be landing in the Mozilla folder. But you can always do, who am I? And then you will see, yes, that you are an administrator. So somebody click on the link, yes? I'm using administrator, not because to show you like, oh, administrator, I clicked on the link, oh, he was not aware. No, it's not my goal. My goal is to show you the pattern, yes? If I would like to use other vulnerability, here we go. But this is just fast, and it brings the point. And my point, it's going to be presented right now. So what I will do, I'm going to create myself a user. So net user, hacker, password, add, completed successfully, net user, net local group, administrators. And then hacker, add, mistake, no, add, why command completed successfully, this is strange. To be sincere, this session is never super stable, but let's check out. Yeah, I mean, it's a simple thing, yes? Okay, so we got it, hacker, perfect. So at that point, what we can do, we can open up the console, which is this one, and we can go to our desktop, and then 10.10.10, and this was IP address 251. Perfect. So at that point, we can log in as hacker. Yeah, hacker is going to be the local user, but it doesn't really change a thing, because I will get the domain admin's password anyway. Perfect. So we're in, yes? So what I would like to show you at that certain level, let's turn off these default things. I'm going to run for myself console as an admin because I can. I just added myself to a local administrators group. Perfect. So let's continue. I can do net use and connect to my tools and then do my job. I decided to make them on Z drive. So over there, I do have my tool. It's actually, I mean, the tool that I have, but you can download this. This is this WCE that I mentioned at the beginning. So let me actually run it. WCE, that allows me to grab the passwords from LSA, and these are the LSA secrets, but I'm able to do this on the fly. If domain admin was logged on, maybe we'll find his password here. This is the notation, by the way. My domain is secure. This is a domain admin. This is some Freddy, innocent user. This is us. This is some user that is logged on. This is the local admin. I mean, my passwords are a bit boring, but if you are a terminal server administrator, you know what to do. Yes? And you're going to be like, ooh, Anna likes, John. Okay, I know. It's not a little bit ethical. Yes? But this is what I want to show you. Do I want to scare you? Maybe just a little bit. To show you what is the possibility. This is the thing. Just to show you what is the possibility. Okay, guys, let's move forward. Time for rootkit. So I can do this from the hacker's account, for example. And for that, I'm going to use the rootkit that is called Keepit. Yes? And the rootkit allows me to technically influence whatever you see in the operating system. But I need to do this from the system account, which means I need to run psexec. Psexec minus s minus I minus d cmd.exe. So this is the setup. Psexec can be downloaded from sysinternals. Yes? And I'm going to have cmd.exe running as, agree, local system. Which means I do have a debug privilege. As long as I do have a debug privilege, I can move forward. Perfect. Keep it. And at that point, I would like to, first of all, import some Keepit modules. So I'm going to use first DCOM. DCOM stands for Direct Kernel Object Modification. It's a technique for a rootkit. Great, we got it. The next thing that I'm going to upload, it's called FSys. This is the module that is used for playing with system, actually the file system. And the next thing that I'm going to load is going to be related to a keylogger. So keybdl. Here we go. And to be sincere, my job is done. I can remove my account, yes? Because now rootkit is there. And I can do a couple of things when using the session of that innocent user that is called our desktop, sorry, and then that is called Freddy. 251, bum. Freddy. So we already know that Freddy, because we read the password of Freddy, fkruegger, bum, we can log in as him. And then we can do the job as a regular user. And by the way, every user can do it. User account. So let me show you one thing. At that certain point, maybe let's try from the simple thing. Task manager, show processes from all users. As you see, I'm a regular user, yes? So I cannot really do it. Perfect. So let me just finish that. Or maybe just let me keep it like that. And I'm going to do command prompt. And I'm going to connect myself to the Z drive, where the tools are, and I'm going to use Keepit one more time. But this time, I'm going to use it in a very special way. Just for the, Kruger, we see. Keepit, and I'm going to use it with PGS switch. That's something that allows me to inject myself, be a little bit privileged. 5776, this is my process ID for the console. 5776. Perfect. Here we go. Make sense? Now you know what's my point? The point is that as long as we do make some small misconfiguration, we are not up to date. We've forgotten about something. Something was a little bit too privileged. User could be a local admin, for example, or could become a local admin using the offline access. Yes? All the stuff. We can get to the point in which we are a little bit crossing the long red line, and now we are operating on the lowest possible level. What about the detection? Try. DCOM? Mm-mm. Last year, I was presenting on TechEd. My session is called Crouching Admin Hidden Hacker. You will find the recording on Channel 9, and I was showing manually, step by step, how to be actually a rootkit. This one is just a tool. Okay. So at that certain point, I can, for example, be back. And I can return. Yes? So this is it. Okay, a couple of more things that I would like to show you at that point. Whenever we do have this administrator working on the terminal server, which is over here. So remember, we click on the website. This is how everything started. Whenever we do have this guy, we would like to, and this is so common, open up the command prompt. And we are like, OK, let's verify, for example, what is the command prompt's ID. So this is administrator, and we do have a couple of command prompts open. But my administrator's command prompt, which is in here, is going to be possibly 2104. We can verify on that as well. So we do have here users. And users, they do have some sessions. So we can use some session, for example, the session number 2, and verify what's going to be how we are able to switch in between a certain identities in operating system. So if you at this point say, oh, I want to be the user, and this is, I'm always laughing, it's a little bit like female standard. I want to be an admin, which means I have to become one, yes? Okay, so we do have an active session, session number 2. Okay, but still, attacker does not know it. I just know it. As you remember, we're not able to do that, yes? So from the user's perspective, what we can do, we can open up, let's say I'm going to close this console because I don't need it anymore. I'm going to open up command prompt, and I'm going to switch again to the Z drive. And at that certain point, what I need to do, I need to do task list in a verbose mode. And task list in a verbose mode allows me, because I can always list the users, administrator session number 2 from here, allows me to stream the information about who is right now logged into the system to, let me minimize that, C, so it's going to be C, users, Freddy, F. Kruger, desktop, and then tehet tag.txt. Typo, oh, task list, thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Appreciate it. So, at that point, we do have this file in here, and we can search for session number 2 and for cmd.exe. So at that certain point, maybe we can find it. We can filter it out. This is some session number 3, session number 2, cmd.exe. We can go through it. Oh, we've got cmd.exe here. And we do have a 2104. So this is the one that we had before, yes? 2104. Perfect. So what we can do, I'm going to close, so I do have this command prompt open, 2104, not to forget it. My process ID is 3268. So at that point, what I will do, I'm going to do keep it. And at that point, I'm going to do PST, and I'm going to put my CMD, so it's 4268, and this one was 2104, right? Perfect. 2104. Okay, enter. I was ready. Okay. The next thing that I would like to show you, it's actually the last thing related to this rootkit. I mean, this rootkit can do a lot of stuff. But I would like to show you one pretty interesting thing. We do have this administrator over here. What we can do, we can basically log ourselves, log our desktop. So log. If I would like to log in, I just do it like that, and then I log in, obviously, yes? So this is very easy. But the thing is that at that certain point, I will jump into the rootkit. I'm going to elevate myself, so using something that we already use, which is PGS. And I'm going to put here, pass here, the process ID of my command prompt. Okay, let me run Task Manager. It should be somewhere in the bottom, I think. Task Manager, hello. Paula is asking you to stand up. Close. Let me run it again. Here we go. 4716. Unfortunately, we need to check for it like that because we need to inject ourselves into a certain processes. 16. So here we go. And the next thing that I will do, I will basically do a small trick that is related to patching the memory of the virtual machine that is standing in the back. So at this point, PBP, and searching for pattern administrator. Here we go, no typos, perfect. So here we go. Login. Somebody said Jesus. Can I play a small sound? Because I got a voice for that situation, if you don't mind, because it sets up the whole mood of the situation. So, tum-tum-tum. I don't know this guy, by the way. So this is like his 5 minutes. So, ready? Voice, please. Hey, music guys, voice. Give me the voice. Is it playing? Okay. Lesson learned. Why this was possible? Application. I use the simple vulnerability in application. So as long as you do have this kind of situations, that's okay. Because things that are holy, they happen. But as long as you know how to manage it. So when you do have this, mitigate everything that is around. Yes? Make sure that things are possible. Try it on your own server. Yes? Try it and see if things are good. Of course, I'm not responsible for breaking anything. Yes? But try it. Verify this as works. Best security practices. Because we, at that certain point, accepted the unsigned Java applet. It could be signed, though. So it's not that fully complete. But user should never click on any kind of link that the user does not know. And again, awareness. Yes? Whenever we are thinking about DCOM, direct kernel object modification, that requires high privileges. But that's something to be taken whenever you do have some vulnerability, whenever you have some misconfiguration. So what I suggest, simple thing. Autoruns a C command line tool, download. In Autoruns, you've got all the tools presented, all the things presented that are important from the operating system security. Make the scan on every server once a month. Verify for all the things that you got. Compare. Oh, this is new. Badone is not digitally signed. We should verify this problem, yes? So this is the concept. Make the periodical checks, even on your own, even the simple ones. Set up the baseline, Autoruns C, and verify what is good, what is bad, what requires signature, what has no signature, what's something that you don't know, and so on. Okay. The next thing that I would like to show you, it's actually related to a pretty interesting subject. But before I will show you that, small survey. So on my presentations, I tend to ask TechEd attendees, what do they think about certain issues? So here we go. The first question that was asked, do you keep on your FTP server portable apps? And what do I mean by portable app? Is everything that is a standalone concept. It might be an installer, it might be an executable, it might be whatever that I can modify, which makes it a file. Yes? Files that bring you some service. So this was the concept that is standing behind portable apps. Whatever that runs, I can modify it. So what do IT administrators said? 12 of 18, they said, yeah. And they were happy about it. They said, yeah. And I'm like, oh yeah, really? So, what is the problem? The problem is that we do always have these strange kinds of repositories. Sometimes we are using file servers, sometimes we are using FTP servers. But the problem relies not in FTP server, well, that's the other story, not in FTP server, not in a file server, but to the appropriate permissions that people have whenever they are accessing the resources. So, imagine that since like today, all your files on the file server, whatever the form they got, executable, MSI, whatever, somebody modifies them, yes? And whoever runs the files, magical things are happening. When you are admin, you're going to become you rerun your app, there's going to be a new admin added by accident. Whenever you are somebody else, some couple of other things are going to happen. Because to every file, we're adding a workload that's going to do the things when you run them. Let me show you a couple of things. But before we jump to that demo, well, I'm complaining on IT pros, so developers must be included as well. Sorry. So, this is a discussion that they had. Do you have UIC turned on, don't you? And developers were like, And let me tell you one thing. This is kind of problematic. Any developers in the room? Put your hands up, guys. Yeah, okay, a couple of you, like 20 people. So probably you can confirm that Visual Studio running on not the local admin it's not the perfect solution. Do you kind of agree? Of course you can make it running on the user, but it takes time. Time is money. I want to do my code. So at some point, we are just closing one eye, and we're like, okay, let's run Visual Studio as an admin. And then you do your old stuff. And that's okay, I understand that. And everybody else can understand that as well. This is your computer, your Visual Studio, just stay there, yes? But the problem is that whenever you're running these portable apps, that brings additional risk to the field. So the answer was, 14 of 15 developers said, maybe they were just ashamed that I'm talking to them. I don't know. They were like, I'm like, what do you mean by I mean, you can have fun with this kind of stuff. But the security thing. Infecting repositories. Yes? So this is something when you are in a bad mood, you're like, let's do some fun. Yes? You can do that. And let me show you the thing. Let me switch to my duplicated desktop. It's going to be a little bit better. I'm going to put that, minimize that. Escape. Yes. Yes. So, you see my body? Can you imagine what was the situation? Like, it's like, okay. next thing. Security. Oh. Infector. This is my tool. If you're a developer, don't laugh. Yes? The tool is ugly. I know. But it works. So what the tool is doing? The tool is actually connecting to FTP server that you specify. Might be file server, whatever. And then it's verifying all the files. As long as it finds executable, it infects it. Cool. So when I find your file, I'm going to infect it. When you publish something new, I'm doing the scanning over and over again, and I will infect it. So whatever you publish is going to be infected, as long as I do have a write access, of course. So let's connect, and let's verify what we can do. So as you see, I mean, if you enter this website, it's alive. So you can, but don't download Zoomit, because I'm infecting it. So okay, and as you see, Zoomit, new one, haha. This is a new file that user uploaded. So I love this kind of cheap kind of messages. New one, haha, infected successfully, yeah. But let's be serious, what is happening? Yes, we are first downloading the file, and as you see, there was a small file that uploaded on the desktop. Infected, uploaded, yes? So kind of new era of the internet, all the smileys. Okay, so we got it, yes? So we've got the Zoomit thing that is uploaded to the network. What we can do at that stage, we can, for example, download it from the FTP server. Either way, for example, we can download it from the website. It doesn't really matter. So we can do this from the website, for example. So malware demo. If you want, you can do this from here. I have this install thing here. And there is the Zoomit. I can also do this using the FTP server that I have. So the same situation, because this is something that I have on the web. And at that point, I can go to malware demo, install, and then I can download Zoomit to my desktop. Let me minimize that so that we don't mess it up. This one can go out because we don't need it. Zoomit. Okay. Yes, let's download it. Perfect, replace at the destination. So we've got this Zoomit over here. So the thing is, what's going to happen? And let me actually show you the website first because it's a little bit better. When the user, because check this out, I'm not elevating myself. When the user double clicks on it, what's going to open? The Zoomit's going to open. Let me close my original Zoomit so that we don't mess it up. You're going to see the Zoomit working. I'm clicking Zoomit. The Zoomit has a different icon. And as you already see, the Zoomit is over here. So we can run Zoomit. Pow. Yes? But the problem begins because if I refresh my website, what I'm finding over here, underscore is the name of my workstation, are all the files that I had in Pula folder, just because you opened Zoomit. No UAC required. Yes? Possible? So, there's this sign tool that you can play with. And this is something that is coming in WDK. And sign tool can verify the signature. So always, this is the lesson learned, always verify a signature of whatever you've got. Whenever you've got a repositories, verify who is actually having a right access to the certain resource. Okay, guys. We discussed a couple of things that are related with offline access, online access. Now it's time for the summary. If I could ask you at the end of the session about one thing, so again, lesson learned. Next time, when you're going to be home, for example, when you're going to be home and next, during the next week, if you could sit for the moment and think about the entry points, yes? What can you do for better? I mean, USB sticks, for example. Maybe there is something that we could work on. Yes, maybe we don't need USB sticks. Maybe we could handle offline access. Yes, maybe we could do some awareness trainings for users. Just think about all the controversial things that you have and write the business-wise arguments and go to management and present it. Yes, give it a try. Maybe they're going to say, no, we don't have a budget for that. Or maybe they're going to say, in the next fiscal year. Then we are super lucky at that point, yes? And maybe, next year, when you're going to come to my session, you're going to say, oh, that's something that I already implemented. We're already secure enough, yes? So please use some resources. This session was a repeat for the session that was at the beginning, so it has this R code. Use the links. They're very useful. Hope you enjoy it. Please fill out the evaluations. Obviously, and thank you for coming, and I hope you're going to come to my morning session at 8:30, but first, bring or drink a cup of coffee, because it's going to be very intensive. Okay? Thank you so much.